sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You are listening to Becky Ivins, and we are have the pleasure of talking this morning to Ron Shalott, who's looking at me and reading my lips since my headset didn't get plugged in. So good morning, Ron.
Good morning. It's a foggy day here in Oklahoma City, so we're kind of trying to clear out the fog today.
For sure.
In our discussion.
Okay. In fact, that's what we're going to do today. We're talking about kind of clearing up the fog and picking up the pieces of things that we have started to address throughout the year and maybe didn't get quite finished. And there's some important things that you guys need to know. So Ron Shalott, my attorney, if you need an attorney, I'm just going to suggest call Ron. I'm going to give you his number two or three times today because Ron is a fair man. He's cover your ears, Ron. I don't want you to get all big-headed about this. He's brilliant. He's brilliant in life. He lives a good life, good honorable life, and he knows the law and cares about his clients. So I don't know what more you could ask for in of anybody, but especially your attorney. Kind of an odd bird you are, Ron Shalott.
I think I'm going to quit now. I'm ahead.
Okay. I'm going to spell the name for you. It is S-C-H-A-U-L-A-T. And his phone number is 528-2890. And you'll have a very short conversation with someone on the phone, right, to set an appointment.
Sure.
To see if it's something that you're going to be able to help them with.
Sure. Usually what I do is I answer my own phone. I don't screen them through a receptionist or anything. If I'm not there, it goes to a voicemail, and I usually ask what's it about. When I talk to someone, of course, I want to find out what is this about that we're trying to get together on. And if it's an area that I don't practice in, because I don't practice in everything, then I will tell them that I don't handle that area. And I will try to refer them to another individual that I trust, or sometimes I'll say, let me check around and find somebody and get back with you. If it is something that I am interested in, I think I can help them with, I'll set up a meeting, an appointment to come in and talk with me. Sometimes it's something that only takes a couple of minutes on a phone call, and I'll just say, well, do this, and if there is a problem that results from it, then you can contact me back again or come see me. But there are some things that don't necessitate really engaging an attorney.
There you go. So Ron Shalott, 528-2890 is his office number. And today we are talking about, we're going to start off talking about some basic stuff that we've talked about all year, which is how to take title to a property and why you would take title in a certain way as opposed to another way.
Sure. It is something that we bantered about a little bit. We've kind of mentioned, but we didn't really get much in depth on it or explore it. For individuals who are owning a home, putting it in their name is good. And having, if you have a spouse, having your spouse on the title is good because that way, if you pass away, it'll transfer to the spouse if it's joint tenancy with the right of survivorship. But it's got to have that word, with those words, rights of survivorship, because if it just says joint tenancy, with the spouse, it doesn't automatically transfer. There's a process you have to go through. If it's not a spouse, then it does not automatically transfer, and you have to jump through some hoops to even try to get it to transfer, and there's some legal issues that can result from that. So that's one way. You can put it into a trust, a revocable living trust, which then the trust really has the title of the property, and the trust itself controls the terms of how the property is disposed of or transferred upon the event of a contingency such as death or disability.
Well, and more often than not, the creator of the trust, the person who creates the trust, is the trustee.
More often than not, because most of the trusts are going to be what are called revocable. You can revoke them at any time that when you're alive. Revocable trusts, and their whole purpose is to try to transfer property without going through a probate. It is a mechanism to try to resolve property issues in that way. It's private because it does not get filed with the court, so you don't have everybody looking to see where everything went or what it was. There are good reasons for it. And, of course, we know with some of our friends who do estate sales that they would rather have a trust rather than a will and a probate, because with the trust you can have a more expedient sale as opposed to the probate process where you have to wait a certain amount of time, you have to get a court order to sell the property, and then have beneficiaries agree to it or go through actual hearing.
And then there's issues also with estate sale folks. Matt McNeil is one that I deal with quite a lot, and he's very particular as to taking a sale because he has to know who legally owns that estate, the personal belongings inside the real property.
Right. Sometimes people think that, mom or dad passed away, and now I can just go ahead and do what I want. It doesn't really work that way. And you have to be very careful about it. If there is a will, you have to go through a probate process and get the proper person appointed. Yes, it may be the child, and there may be no problem with it. But there could be issues, especially today we have a lot of blended families, and blended families is a situation where you have a husband and a wife, and they have children from previous relationships, and those can turn into very difficult situations. So you want to look at that and see how that would resolve if the survivor or the two remaining spouses passes away, and what's the most expedient way to resolve the situation. And with a trust, it does act in a faster manner than a will and a probate. Not that a will and a probate are necessarily bad things, but there are statutory times that have to expire.
So, Ron Charlotte, my attorney, his phone number, if you want to contact him, is 528-2890. If we are open to questions this morning. So, the listener line number is 840-1000. It's 405-840-1000 if you want to call. And what we are going to talk about coming up is what happens if you marry after you own property. You own the property, then you get married. And maybe you're going to die before the spouse. Does the spouse have any interest in that property? How can you assure that your children get the benefit of that property instead of the spouse's grown children? There's things that you can do ahead of time to help on this, and we're going to talk about that when we return with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move with Becky Ivins. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move with Becky Ivins, and you are listening to Ron Charlotte, who is my attorney and guides me. Ron, I love it because you guide me before I take action.
I try to keep you out of trouble.
If I take any kind of legal action, I send it to you first, because that way you look it over and you make sure that I'm not making a dumb move, right? Something's going to kind of come back and bite me afterwards.
We try to look at things and try to cover all the bases the best we can. And oftentimes I use the what-if game, you know, try to think of situations that probably won't happen, but if they did, do we have it covered or at least addressed?
And one of the things you've kind of hounded me about is a will and the durable power of attorney and the will.
Correct.
And
very important.
Very important. And how many people have a will?
The estimation is no more than 40%, and that's even attorneys. You know, attorneys are just as bad as everybody else in having a will or a trust. But usually if you have trust, you also have a will, because you have the trust will dispose of things that are in the trust, but you would normally have a will to go with it just in case you got something or you had something that didn't get into the trust. Then you've got kind of a safety net to pour it into the trust.
I have told this story before on the air, and it's a short story, but I sold a house for a developer's son, and he had a trust. The developer did. Then he dies. And he forgot to put in his will that he carried the mortgage on two pieces of property for a son and a granddaughter. And as it turns out, there was nobody available to sign the release of mortgage when it came time to sell those properties because they were not included. It has to go through probate to determine who has the right to even sign the mortgage that you own.
Sure. When you pass away, and let's ignore the trust for a second. When you pass away, everything you own, everything you owe goes into what we call your estate. Now, that may be formally set up with a probate action with a court. It may be informally taken care of through some type of other arrangement. But there's an estate, and it's everything that you, when you died, you owned at that time, and everything that you owe. Now, if you have everything in a joint tenancy with a right of survivorship, that automatically transfers, or something like a life insurance policy that pays automatically on death to a beneficiary, that transfers, or an IRA with a beneficiary, that transfers. But other stuff goes into your estate, and that's what a probate does, is it looks at your estate administration as to what do we do with these assets? Are there any debts out there that need to be addressed? And so we have creditor claims and times to do that. Once the creditor claims are addressed and all the assets are brought in and accounted for, then the court can order a distribution based upon either a will, if there's a last will and testament that's approved, or under state law through intestate succession. Intestate means no will.
So, the scenario that we had before we went to break was, let's just say you've got this married couple, married for, let's just, 10 years, okay? Each of these couples is a second marriage, so they've got adult children. Okay. The husband owned the house before they ever got married. I mean, long before the husband gets married. And the husband's about to die. So he's concerned that his wife's kids are going to be the ones to inherit his life savings, which is wrapped up into the real estate. So what do you do in a case like that?
First off, you see an attorney, but I have to caution you on this because this is something that I'm very much into, which is you have a husband and wife, they have separate children, you have assets that precede the marriage. Can the same attorney visit with the husband and the wife together? I mean, that gets to be a very fuzzy situation. I know a lot of attorneys do it, and I've seen it all the time. But I've also seen situations where that's not necessarily appropriate. And I would caution that the husband should meet with a separate attorney and not necessarily bring the wife in on that initial meeting. Now, if he wants to waive that privilege, waive that conflict of interest, you can do that. But you need to be careful with that because the attorney, who does the attorney represent? Who's the client? If you've got the husband and the wife and they have competing interest or potentially competing interest, who is the client at that particular point? And so you have to be careful with that.
Okay. So there's a lot of ways that could be handled.
Sure. I mean, you could put it into a trust, for example. And there you might even look at an irrevocable trust, one that can't be changed or revoked immediately. Or you could put it into the husband's revocable trust. Now, the wife would have a homestead interest, and she's been living there for quite some time, a marital interest. You know, she can make some claim on that, which she could waive. But I would really prefer, if we're going to do that, that the wife have separate legal counsel to fairly, and I'm being fair to both sides, to fairly consult with her and tell her what she's giving up and what she can expect later on, so there's no surprises. Otherwise, who's the attorney really representing?
I know, hard to... If you can only have one client.
You can only have one client, and where you have clients with competing interests, they can waive a privilege up to a point, but when you get into certain conflicts of interest, as an attorney, you become a bit uncomfortable as to who is being benefited by your advice and how do you put the advice out there that you want to make sure that both individuals are fairly represented and have their interests fairly protected.
Right. You ready for a phone call? If you guys, if you're listening and you have a question about how to title a property, what do you do when there's a divorce? What do you do when there's a death? How can you prevent going through a bunch of legal steps, which are always costly? You can call and ask us. It is 840-1000, 405-840-1000. Good morning, Georgiana.
Good morning. I have a question. A situation where a father died in 2014 and left his land to his two children, and the older one was made executrix or trustee of the property, and now one of them wants to sell that property and the other one doesn't. How do you reconcile that when it was in a trust?
Is it still in a trust is what my first question would be.
That's I don't know how it would not still be in a trust.
Well, sometimes a trust will distribute out property upon the certain condition, which is the death of an individual. The trust itself will say half of this goes to child A, the other half goes to child B. Sometimes there will be other conditions or other distributions, or it'll go into a trust for child A and then a separate trust for child B. So it may have been distributed out into the individuals themselves. So you have to look at the present status of it to see how it's titled now.
And, you know, so I just recently closed on a property where the trustee was the oldest of three children. And we sold the family home, and everyone was in favor of selling. Well, there was a lot of discussion about before this home was sold, but finally we sold the family home when everyone got on board with the fact that it could be sold. But the trustee had distributed the title to this real property to the three children, which were adults. I mean, we're talking 50 to 60-year-old people. And one of the children, the middle child, after the distribution, it went into the three names, child A, B, and C. Well, child B gets married. Child A and C are already married. So at the closing, they were quite surprised when all six of them had to sign the deed.
Sure. And actually, you can even get worse factual scenarios where, for example, child B has a terrible debt and you've got some sharp lawyer collecting the debt, and this is not homestead property, so now all of a sudden this is an asset that a judgment can be leaned upon. So you can run into those situations, or you can run into other complicating factors. Suppose child B is incapacitated with some kind of illness or condition and is no longer competent or capable, or they're under some type of disability or your federal disability assistance that could affect it. There are a number of things that can run into it. And the first thing I look at is, first off, is it still in trust? Or had it gone into a probate, if it was a will? Does a trustee have the authority to sell it? Do they have the authority to liquidate it? And If they do, then does the trust give the trustee the absolute discretion when to sell it? And the trustee has a trust relationship, a fiduciary relationship to the trust and to the beneficiaries. So there are certain things you want to know ahead of time as to that. But to get more to Georgiana's ultimate question is, if you've got a situation where you've got two kids, what do you do if you've got two owners of a property, so to speak? There's something called a partition action, which is a lawsuit filed to partition the property, to either divide it up or to sell it if it can't be cut up in two, to sell it and then the proceeds divide it. So there's a legal action called partition that could be utilized.
And Georgiana, let me give you Ron Shalott's phone number, because a quick conversation with him would probably do you a lot of good. It is 405-528-2890. We're going to return with more of Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move with Becky Ivins. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move with Becky Ivins, and you're listening this morning to Ron Shalott, who is my attorney at law, and his number is 528-2890. It's time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to help you select the right shingle for your house, whether it be tar and gravel, some kind of a flat roof thing. They do repairs, and their number is 728-3700, 728-3700, Robbins Roofing. And now, our word of the day today is title, as in property title.
Title, oh man. Well, title, we get it from the French, titre. It means title, yeah, but it really refers to an inscription or a label or a mark on something. So that mark or that inscription, that label, designates who has this right, this legal right to this property. And that's what title really is, the designation of the legal right to property. So that's your title. And we use it to show who's the owner. You know, we just say that, who owns the property.
Who owns? And sometimes that's not so easily determined, is it?
Sometimes it's not. And in fact, when you're going to purchase property, one of the first things that, and I know you do this, and other realtors need to do it, and even if an individual is going to buy it themselves, is to check, does this person have the authority to sell it? In other words, do they have the title to the property? Or do they only have joint title? Or is the title in somebody else's name? Or is the title the name of somebody that they have a durable power of attorney on, but does that give them legal right to negotiate and to transfer title? It's a big thing these days as to whether or not a person has actual title to transfer.
Well, I would say at least one out of every 20 calls I get wanting me to list property, the person calling does not have title to the property. They perceive themselves as having ownership in that property, but they do not have title rights to that property.
You don't want to spend your time and money only to find out that you're talking to the wrong person, somebody that if you gave them cash, can't give you anything.
Right. And property is a little more difficult than an automobile, but it's kind of like an automobile. I mean, I can't take one of your cars and go get the title and sign it because I don't own your vehicle. I am not a title owner.
You can give me a large sum of cash, and I can give you a quick claim deed to the governor's mansion, but that doesn't give you anything other than...
Does not transfer ownership, does
no,
it?
No, it does not.
You cannot transfer ownership unless you are entitled to the property have rights to transfer ownership by the court.
And what's interesting is I said quick claim deed. You notice that? That's the deed that says if whatever I've got, I'm transferring to you. If I got nothing, I ain't transferring anything to you. It's a warranty deed, which warrants, guarantees that I have the ownership, the title. Because then I'm warranting, I'm assuring you that I do. But still, you'll want to have that checked out. And especially if it's in a representative capacity with a durable power of attorney, you want that looked at by legal counsel to see, does this person really have the authority to transfer it? Because later on, a title attorney is going to look at this, when you go to sell it, may look at it and go, hey, there was never authority. And then you've got to go back and fix it. And that is expensive.
So there's a lot to title to a property. Our word of the day brought to you by Robbins Roofing, 728-3700. Georgiana, you had a question and you had a follow-up question. So I'd like to take that before we go to our mortgage minute.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. I think that some trust or what do you call them?
Trust?
Well, this one is a trust. Have clauses about one of the heirs questioning its contents that would kind of slap the heir that's questioning and disinherit it at times. I've heard that. I don't know if it's true, but
actually. Ironically, I was just in court yesterday on one of these. So,
really?
Yes. We called an interim clause or a no contest clause. Those are sometimes in wills, often in trusts. And I'll tell you, in trusts that I create for my clients, I'll put a privacy clause in them saying that the terms of this trust shall not be revealed to anyone. If a beneficiary wants to know what they're getting, that can be disclosed, but the rest of the beneficiaries, how much they're getting, how much is in the trust, is not disclosed because it's a private trust. And that's part of the trust process.
A lot of why you do a trust.
A lot of times why you do a trust. And you may want to, for example, give money to some organization, and you don't want the kids to know that all their money is going to an organization and they're getting $100, you know.
Yeah.
So you have that kind of thing.
I've got a friend that's dying that is has kids, more than one child, but one of the children, she doesn't want to leave money to that child because they are living a life that's destructive, and she knows that they're likely to overdose on the money that they're going to spend on the drugs they'll spend money on.
It's one of the things that we've been cautioned about in estate planning meetings is trust that just dump money into individuals with addictions. And then if you say, well, it can be used for their medical care or health care, does that include
CBD oil?
Medicaid. What does that include? I mean, you have to really define that. That's what they're, or even addiction care. Even, that's one of the things that they're cautioning us about. Now, Georgiana had a question about clause questioning a trust. Usually it's a no contest clause. That if you can test a trust or if you are trying to challenge or change the terms of the trust, if you go to court to try to question it, most courts, if it's a private trust, says, no, you have no right to it, it'll slap you down. You have to show that you do have a right to it. That won't necessarily disinherit you, but you could be in a situation to where you are paying some court costs and lawyer's fees.
Well, one of the aspects of this situation is the father died in 2014, and we just thought, it ought to be settled in 4 years.
Depends upon the situation. That's always a hard question to answer without knowing more details.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to mislead you on it.
Mm-hmm.
I know trusts that continue on for several years. There are limitations as to how long a trust can go, but there are times a trust can go on for an appreciable period of time. Beneficiaries usually have the right to see what affects them, and that's what that would have to be done, is the beneficiary question it and see, so what is this, and what are the obligations and the opportunities.
I'm really going to suggest, Georgiana, that you place a phone call to Ron Shalott, because he can get into the particulars of this with you and talk specifics as opposed to just generalities, which is what we can really discuss on the radio. His number is 528-2890. It's 528-2890. We're going to return with more right after this break on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move with Becky Ivins. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move with Becky Ivins. And you had the pleasure this morning of calling in and talking to Ron Shalott, my attorney at law. And his office phone number is 528-2890. Ron, we are we've rounded the corner. We're heading home here. But tell me, I was supposed to ask you a question. I've totally forgotten what I'm supposed to ask you.
You're supposed to ask me about succession plan.
Succession plan. Well, of course, I would forget that. I don't want to face that myself. Succession plan for a small business.
Right, and most people have a business. They don't even know it. Sometimes it's a hobby. They call it a hobby.
Well, in a business, I mean, an independent real estate agent has a business.
Has a business, correct.
So that you need a succession plan.
You do need a succession plan because, even as I said, even if it's a hobby, it can turn into a business before you realize it. And it needs to be set up properly, first of all. You have to have some type of plan if you become injured or ill or pass away, if death occurs. There's got to be something there to help with this business to continue on, especially if you have other people relying upon it or working for you in that regard. But you certainly want to have that plan out there. And it's something that even lawyers don't like to think about. We don't like to think about what happens if something happens to us. But you need to have that plan.
Well, and in the real estate world, it's different because the real estate commission kind of says what you can and cannot do. LLCs are different than corporations, are different than just individual people.
Well, and professionals have some limitations on what they can do. You know, doctors, you know, with their patient records, those kind of things. Attorneys with their client records. So there are limitations on some of the professions. But even if you don't have a profession, there still needs to be some type of plan if something happens to you so that people know. And a durable power of attorney can take care of your personal finances and your personal health care decisions, but you need a plan for your professional or your business situation. And one of the things that we have now in state work, if you have an individual not married who owns a piece of real property by themselves and you want to have that transferred at death, there's a statute that's been out that's now about 10 years old. Called the Non-Testamentary Transfer of Property Act. And this is something that's relatively new for us in law, but it is a way for there to be a succession or a transfer of the property upon death where it doesn't go through a probate and doesn't go through a trust. It requires that you file a transfer on death deed, file it with the county clerk where the property is located, and the deed essentially says that if I die owning this property, here's where it goes. And the person that's to receive it then has a limited period of time, 9 months after death, to file an affidavit accepting the property, receiving the property. And if so, it actually transfers to them. But it's a simple way to transfer real property. And I've had this recently with an elderly individual who is single, you know, widow or widower, to transfer property where it then doesn't go through the probate process, because many times that's the last big thing that they've got.
Right. And the transfer on death deed is for real property, meaning real estate.
Real property.
Not
real
really estate. The business, though.
No, not the business. There is one for vehicles as well, but not for other things, such as your business. Like you've said, for that you need to have that set up appropriately if you have it set up formally as an LLC or corporation, or if it is a partnership, the partnership automatically dissolves. If it is a sole proprietorship and you pass away, of course, the business technically ends, so it's really just the assets of the business at that particular point.
Okay. So we just have about 2 minutes, but Noah, you have a question for Ron?
Yes, thank you, Becky. I don't have the title to my home, and I want to know if I should have it, or is it filed away someplace up there in the Capitol building or something? The actual title to my home.
Yeah, you're talking about the actual piece of paper.
Pardon me?
You're talking about the actual piece of paper that shows that you have title. What you would do is you would look at the county clerk in the county that the property is located. The county clerk. It's like Oklahoma County, the Oklahoma County clerk, or if it's Pottawatomie County, the Pottawatomie County clerk.
And they would know where the title is.
Yes, they would have a copy of it on record. Give them the address, or if you got a parcel number on the tax form, give them that, or they can even look it up by an owner name. But find out who is the title owner of that property so you can be assured as to where the property is titled at, and then fix it if it's not clear.
And
okay.
I will tell you, Noah, if you will give your phone number to Mike Gannon, I will assist you in doing that. And I thank you guys for listening in, and I thank you, Ron Shalott, whose phone number is 528-2890. For coming in and answering our legal questions today and talking about title. And if you need to contact me during the week, it is 722-3232. All things real estate, 722-3232. We'll see you here same time next week on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move with Becky Ivins.